Thanks, Craig. You probably, in some of this talk, you probably detect a few similarities with the discussion that we've had before. Basically, what I'm going to do this afternoon is just give you an overview of the history of Auslit. So it's a kind of past, present and future talk. I'm going to do that for about 15 to 20 minutes, so I'll look at that 15-minute mark, Craig, and put it up and start to wind down. Then I'm just going to invite Kerry to come up soon after that for a bit of discussion about the challenges that we're facing, and that's bringing research and researchers to light is the challenge that that Auslit's facing at the moment. So I will just continue. I'm probably going to move in and out of the presentation and the web at some stage. I might leave it till the end if there are questions, just particularly about how some of the things work. One of the statements that is influencing the thinking that we're doing up at Auslit and across the nation with a lot of our collaborators is related to a statement like this: the challenges for developers of humanities e-research grouping is to ensure that they move beyond the use of the technology as a means of enabling the sharing of data and information and information commons, and become a forum that enables, supports and sustains collaborative distributed scholarship, a research commons. So that's Auslit's in effect will operate in both ways, and we have had some developments in recent times and certainly in the future as Auslit is restructured in the next 12 to 18 months, where this will, we hope, become a reality. Now, for those of you who don't know, Auslit is a bibliographical database, so it records the history of Australian creative writing from the earliest times until yesterday. If I can see that... There's some 100,000 authors that are recorded and 600,000 or 700,000 works that are recorded. So from the late 1700s up until yesterday, and there's probably a work being recorded as I speak right now. So the two basic concepts that hold all this together are agents, so we're talking about authors and organisations, and works. So works have a structure in them, the functional requirements for bibliographical records. Some of you might be familiar with that. Work, expression, manifestation, and item. That sort of structure enables us to bring together very complicated bibliographical records. So if you have something that's been published over a period of 100 years, there might be 50 or so different manifestations of that work, and so that can be recorded. You can do searches, and as we're finding out in recent years and in at the present time, we can start to do more analytical interpretation of those sorts of things. When Stephen was speaking on Monday, he was talking about the frightening thing that happens sometimes when libraries throw out indexes. Now, Auslit is actually, it has quite a long history. It's built on a card index that was put together in the late 1970s, and it was used for various reasons. It fed into the companion to Australian literature that was published by Oxford, and you'll be pleased to know, Stephen, that this photograph was taken this morning, and so it does exist, and as you can see, you can still do the types of searches that were conducted on these things many years ago, like sustainable data, if you like. So the history begins in that way. In the 1980s, it was decided that such a thing should be transferred into an electronic form, so it went through various stages of a movement into an electronic form. First of all, I think it was a Telnet link up. There was a CD-ROM that came out in the 1990s. As the internet developed, the possibilities for delivery on the web became more and more real. In about 2000, Auslit began to receive a generous federal funding to extend what began in the card index and do almost a decade worth of very intensive indexing that has enhanced what the database has in it, but has also produced the print-based bibliography of Australian literature at the same time. Its foundations were in literary studies, so literary studies as you would think about great works and those sorts of things. But as partnerships have been created between Auslit and various research communities, as you can see, there's quite a list of research communities that Auslit works with. That's sometimes been ravelled up in the funding that's been received from the federal government. And it's produced various types of data sets, such as the Black Words data set that concentrates on Indigenous creative writing. Australian Popular Medievalism is another data set that's being run from the University of Queensland and the University of Western Australia. The Australian Popular Theatre, so you can see this is moving away from book based publications into various things. So we're still talking about creative writers writing screenplays, and the notion that we have a portfolio, a portmanteau career here is something that is really emerging in looking at the way Australian writers have written across various forms. So a lot of Australian writers wrote for magazines, they also published books, some of them published for radio, they published for the theatre, television. And so you might have one writer who's publishing across all of those forms. That's now recording and becoming much more enhanced as we proceed. Screenlit is the one I just mentioned. In the last few years, we've been involved with those of you here yesterday would have seen Jane Hunter's presentation. We were involved in a collaboration with Jane Hunter's group, in which we have tried to extend what Auslit does to enable users of Auslit to be able to engage more directly with Auslit, the database itself, but to search more widely, so include searches beyond Auslit, and to do the sorts of collecting various things and annotating Auslit records. And so in a similar way to those of you here and saw Jane's presentation, the annotation of anthropological artefacts, her group has created a system that is delivered as an extension to the Firefox browser, and if we have time I can do a little bit of a demonstration there. In addition, we have a federated search that has been going for some 18 months. I think the term API has been mentioned here. In conjunction with the National Library of Australia, we've been waiting for the National Library's API to be delivered in order to make the federated search that you see pictured up there work more efficiently for us. If anybody's waiting for that API for their own purposes, Kerry tells me it's coming very soon, but sometime next year. Visualizations of the data, we've been able to put them on a timeline. We can also visualize these as geographical data as well. So if there's a geographical setting that's recorded in the data, that can also be visualized. So this is an experiment that's continuing for us, trying to see beyond just the recording of the existence of literary works in bibliographical records, how much more data can be delivered. Now this is what the extension to the Firefox browser looks like. So if you imagine your Firefox browser with the extensions on it, the top, my left, your right, the top right-hand panel is an annotation tool that enables you to annotate images, HTML pages, most things that you'll find on the web, creating discussions, queries, questions. This material is stored in a server, the Auslit server, in a special section of it. Down the bottom is collections of material. So it's at the moment you'll see the term compound object there. That collection of material can be called a compound object. In when law, the tool becomes available in its 1.0 form, we're going to use the term resource map in order to give us a verb. Compound object doesn't really work with the users that we've tested this on. So to be able to map resources that are available on the web is what's happening there. So that's a collection of resources available on the web that are related to the novel by David Malouf, Jono. Can also annotate OSLIT text as well, once again creating discussions, queries, and you can also annotate OSLIT records in order for users to add information that might not normally be added by OSLIT indexes themselves. This is just a simple view of the collections. You can see there's a relationship between those two authors. There are some things that OSLIT doesn't record, and that's one of those in the research that I'm involved with is literary editorial. So there's a relationship that's recorded there that is not normally recorded in OSLIT data. So in this way, creating resource maps that are stored and delivered with OSLIT data, the relationships between agents in the OSLIT database becomes more meaningful. And useful in that it can be delivered in this way. This is a fairly rudimentary visualization. One of the things that we're doing next year is extending that much more, using more robust visualization tools in order to see what sort of questions can be answered by visualizing the relationships between agents within the OSLIT database. With so much material being digitised, particularly in the National Library, and particularly for the purposes of researchers in literary studies, the Australian newspaper digitisation project that some of you have probably used in historical study provides researchers in literary studies to gather together instalments of a serialisation. There are a lot of serialisations that OSLIT has missed for whatever reason, particularly because newspapers have previously been in the library, hard to find, but with being able to search on a particular keyword and find, for instance, this John Cleary serialisation that was never published in book form, that can be quickly gathered together and basically a very simple electronic edition of that serialisation can be made in a short time. Another way that we can export this material is into what OSLIT is calling research trails or learning trails. The Children's Literature Digital Resource, that is one of our collaborators, is using these trails to promote the collection of full text that they have, but you can see here that I've used that to create a trail that includes a serialisation of Ruth Park's Harp in the South, and I'll show you what that looks like live in a minute. For Nick in particular, you can go to this. We have an OSLIT toolkit that has video demonstrations of the tools in action. It also provides access to get an account. At the moment, we're inviting our friends to trial law for whatever reasons they want. And if there are the very specialised applications that you would like, we'd also encourage you to contact Jane Hunter as well. This is not necessarily an OSLIT tool. Ours is the first application of it. But it's an open source tool that can be used for various purposes. RDF, Desmond mentioned RDF as one of the formats. That's what binds all of this together, and that enables export into various versions. Primarily, we just require somebody who will create a style sheet for us that can read that and deliver it in some other way, such as a trail, such as a Word document, and possibly if you ask any sort of question of it, it can be delivered in some other way. We're in the process of a rebuild at the moment, and movement towards open access, and which also includes thinking about open contribution as well, just as we've heard in a lot of presentations during the last couple of days. The need to facilitate open contributions is a real one. If Auslit is to think 5 years ahead, that's quite a mystery as far as funding models go. So we have to think of all possible scenarios that might happen in the next 5 years. So during this rebuilding phase, we are trying to think through the ways in which we can encourage a volunteer community to contribute bibliographical data. That might include anybody across the spectrum. And we've just been thinking through different ways in which to authenticate our users. So that's I'll just leave this up for you to look at for a minute. There'll be no just hit and miss changes to the Auslit database. We'll require people to identify themselves and to sign in. Then there'll be various levels of access. So the higher, the more experience that you have, you'll be able to do more things. There will be some records that will not be able to be touched. They will be deemed finished or only to be edited by Auslit maintainers. And we are starting to conceptualise a process through which any changes will have to go through in order to be accepted into the public delivery of new records. I have the 5 minute sign has come up, so I might just take this opportunity to invite Kerry up, and this is a good moment for us to start the discussion. So Craig, we can take questions from the floor now, and I'll just go online, and if you have any questions about how this might work online, I can do that as we're speaking to you.
The quality of the screen grabs were pretty bad, actually, so I know you wouldn't have been able to read terribly well the content, the material in Auslit, but I guess one of the things that we're at a really major turning point in our history, and that's to do with moving from what has been a legacy system, which was built 10 years ago, or more than that, actually, in 2000, to a totally new structure, which is going to be much more open to contributions. At the moment, those research communities that Roger highlighted there, they have to be formed through a formal collaboration where we need to train people formally in the use of the Auslit database. It's not terribly complicated, but just the nature of the web in 2000 was quite different, so our interface is a lot harder to use than it should be. So our aim to through the restructure is to make it much simpler for people to be able to participate and to embed things like the law tool so that communities can actually come and privately and in whatever way they like create their own data sets and annotate those data sets, aggregate content, and if they wish to, feedback into the system or alternatively publish them in a separate environment. So we're really working out ways to expand our use and also to show the community the nature of what we do and what we have. To identify Auslit as a bibliographic database, I always think sort of actually undercuts its expansive nature. We are fundamentally a fantastic bibliographic resource, but we're also a biographical dictionary. We've probably got the richest collection of biographical entries in Australian writers and organisations relating to Australian literature, to festivals, to magazines, to publishing history. So it's sort of a resource for everything to do with Australian story making and also the secondary material that relates to story making. So we've had this structure of incorporating research while trying to, at the same time, build this, you know, comprehensive record of the history of story in Australia. And we used to say print culture, but it's too limiting to say print culture because we are very much interested in recording Indigenous story and as much diverse culture as possible. So, so watch this space. It's going to be very interesting in about 8 months' time, when we flip the switch to the new system, and we'll be inviting a lot more interaction. So has anyone got any questions for...